to 85% of people are said to be breathing dysfunctionally, which is causing mental issues, foggy mind, slow thinking, poor sleep, weight gain, poor fitness. It makes your teeth wonky, gives you bad breath. So the idea is to start to bring people on the most basic level back to a functional breath.
Chris Davis, Master Breath Practitioner, empowering you to unleash your full potential through the art of breathing.
Oxygen is literally the most important thing that we have. Even just breathing differently, your fitness can improve by up to 20%. So it's like a legal blood doping so that you can improve your performance in a run. Number one practice I'd say for people, if you want to breathe better, first thing you should do is just...
Welcome to the Rockman Podcast, the podcast for those with a deep desire to test and further their limits and live healthier lives with mental fortitude. Hear inspirational stories and get lessons in resilience from those who have conquered the world's toughest challenges in running, adventure, and life. I'm Terry Rosamond, Rockman founder, and today we're exploring the topic of breathwork, the benefits and applications, the scientific understanding, and the integration and practice. If you want to stay up to date on new podcast episodes and help us grow, then be sure to hit the subscribe button below. And if you take any value from this podcast, we'd really appreciate your support by spreading the word. You can help us reach more people and keep this podcast going by giving us a thumbs up, leaving us a comment, or sharing it with a friend. Thank you. And remember, this podcast is brought to you by Rockman, the ultimate running challenge platform. Test your limits and forge a resilient well-being against monthly challenge series inspired by the military's most infamous selection tests and more. Take part at your convenience around your everyday life all year round. There's no fixed schedules, no equipment required, no far-off travel, no extortionate entry fees. All you need is a pair of running trainers and to remember where you live. So if you're feeling trapped in a cycle of comfort, risking the loss of your true potential, Rockman is the answer for you. You can get started right now for free by clicking the link in the show notes below. Today we have a special guest joining us. Chris Davis is a dedicated breathwork facilitator and trainer, specializing in helping individuals release trauma, improve mental health, and elevate their lives to peak states. With a background as a former Royal Marine Commando, Chris brings a unique perspective to his work, drawing on his experience to empower others on their journey of transformation. Please welcome Chris Davis. Chris Davis, what is breathwork?
Good question.
A difficult one, right from the off.
It is, straight in. It is super simple and it's also really complicated. Essentially, any time you're breathing is breathwork to a degree because it makes you have a response in the body. The way I like to categorize breathwork myself is that often when you breathe, your breath will change after a thing has happened. So if you step out into the road, if you jump into an ice bath, your breath changes because of a situation. Breathwork, to me, is putting breathwork before a situation so that you can step into the situation optimally rather than having the body allow itself to change because it chose what the breath was going to be, if that makes sense. So all it's being really is ensuring you put the breathwork first to control the state rather than to allow the state to control the breath, which then controls the state suboptimally.
And as a breathwork practitioner, what do you do then? How do you facilitate correct breath within people?
Sure. So I'll probably say this a lot in the sense that it's different for everyone, right? It's the same as being like a personal trainer. And I didn't know this in the beginning. I thought you just say, this is how you breathe and that's it. I learned the most basic areas of breath, functional breath, we'll call them. But it turns out that everyone has their own little hang-ups, their own little problems, their own little issues, their own little goals. And the way I should work with someone to get them to breathe depends on the outcome they want. So for the most part, about 80 to 85% of people are said to be breathing dysfunctionally, which is causing mental issues such as foggy mind, slow thinking, poor sleep. It's causing weight gain, poor fitness. It makes your teeth kind of wonky, gives you bad breath, you know, tons of different things. So the idea is to start to bring people on the most basic level back to a functional breath by breathing from the diaphragm with good posture to enable them to have the most optimal physicality and mental state they can do. So it's about me watching how they breathe and to bring them back to how they would breathe as a baby, which is the correct way, in order for them to continue forward optimally, really.
That's insane. 85% breathe dysfunctionally.
They say that. And I can't remember the study. I personally think it's more than that. I would say, in my opinion, that 100% of people breathe dysfunctionally. And only because it means at some point during your day, if you breathe dysfunctionally, you have dysfunctional breath, which would mean that that's how it looks, right? So if you think about what's important to you health-wise, people will always say there's training, there's food, there's sleep, those kinds of things, water, sunlight. The thing you can go the least time with is breath. So to me, the most important thing fitness-wise and health-wise has to be the breath, because that's where it all comes from. If when you eat, your breath changes, when you move, your breath changes, when you sleep, your breath changes, when you think, your breath changes. And so for me, going back to the breath to make it as functional and efficient as possible improves everything, because to me, that's the base of every single thing we do.
And what's some of the benefits? It's, so say you nailed your breathing. What are some of the benefits that you can get from proper breath work?
So honestly, there are so many, but I'll go for the most basic ones that will make sense to people. By breathing functionally through the nose, for example, a lot of people breathe through the mouth. Breathing through the nose will allow people to have an extra up to 20% oxygen uptake and better blood flow. And what that does, it's going to improve your fitness, right? So even just breathing differently, your fitness and your efficiency can improve by up to 20% just by having correct nasal breathing using the right muscles. That's just by changing the breath. So if you were to start running today, and I know you're a big runner, you're into that. If you just change to specific nasal breathing and nothing else, and nothing else about your running changed, your fitness would change by potentially up to about 20% efficiency-wise, just because of the oxygen uptake in the body, and that's the primary source of fuel. The driving oxygen into the body can help you think quicker, think sharper. It can help you sleep better. It can help you lose weight. It can help lots of ailments. In fact, there was a study done recently that says that most ailments of the body are actually a dysfunction and a lack of oxygen in the body, almost every one of them, which means once you have the right amount of oxygen in the body, then you're far less likely to be ill in general. So oxygen is literally the most important thing that we have in the body, in my opinion, because it just does so many different things. So it's health, fitness, the way you think, the way you sleep. Sexual dysfunction. Some people honestly can't get erections because they don't have enough nitric oxide or oxygen in the body because they're breathing incorrectly. The digestion of your food, the way you lose weight. I mean, it's absolutely endless. That the breath is literally the thermometer for everything you do.
It's crazy, actually, because when we talk about health and fitness, we're always talking about hydration and nutrition and sort of exercise. But the one thing that you do probably 30 to 60 times every single minute of every single day is breathe. Yeah. And it's never talked about. It's a relatively new sort of practice. It's grown in popularity. As you said before we came on, it's an old practice. Mm. How old is it? Where did it come from?
So, it's technically the first version of yoga. So they say yoga is 5,000 years old. Again, in my opinion, it's older than that. Just through other texts and things I've read. But if we go with the yogic stance, yoga's 5,000 years old. The original version of yoga happened to be breathwork, and it then turned into physicality, so moving with the body. Breathwork is that powerful. If you look at Kundalini yoga, they say Kundalini yoga is a lot of breathwork in there. It's a lot of energy movement. And that's such a powerful style of yoga that they say you should not use it on your own. You should not do it without a good practitioner and a teacher around you, because it can release big types of energy in the body. So breathwork has been around for, again, in my opinion, longer than 5,000 years. But the original version of what we now do, which is pranayama, is roughly 5,000 years old.
And which country? Because they're foreign sounding names, Chris. Where's this come from?
India. So of course
it's in India.
Yeah, yeah. So that's where yoga comes from, is India. And it's, again, super ancient practice. But if we think of breath work itself, when we think of pranayama, which is the movement of energy around the body, prana is energy, we think of yoga. However, the Chinese had breathwork, the Africans had breathwork. There's breathwork from all over the world in different ways. The Aborigines had breathwork. Shamans had breathwork in order to for altered states. South Americans did the same thing. It's just the newest style of breathwork we have now that has become popular is the Indian version.
Mm. And why are people breathing wrong then? I don't know, because like it's probably hard to understand. As you said, 85% are breathing wrong. Mm. Why? Like, surely this should be sort of second nature, like walking to us. What are we doing wrong? And what is causing us? What is making us do this wrong?
Yeah. So it's a really good question. There's, I suppose it's almost like saying, why do we pick things up wrong? Why is it that we pick things up with our back instead of our legs? If you watch a kid pick anything up, they will squat either side of it. They'll dip down with their hands and they'll pick it up exactly like you're supposed to, as the perfect way to pick things up. As children, we are born almost into perfection. It is the idea, at least. All our functions are correct. Now, because of the way we live now, we sit down too much. We're both doing the same thing now. Years ago, we would not have had chairs to sit on, so we'd squat or we'd stand or we'd lie down, which means our supporting muscles would sit in the right place. We'd breathe from the diaphragm correctly. We'd sit up. We would do things like chew roughage and hard meats that weren't cooked, so our jaws would be correct and strong, and the space in our nose would be the right size. We've basically weakened our bodies so much that we've started to have like collapsed palates inside the mouth up here. We've started to have dysfunctions in the way we sit, so we lean over, which means we're having to put our heads up and necks forward and breathe through the mouth in order to drag more air in. And this has caused massive dysfunctions in the way we think, the way we breathe. But most importantly, the breath becomes a cycle. So the moment you breathe incorrectly once, that causes a stress on the body that causes more dysfunction in the breath. And so it ends up becoming this spiraling cycle of the first time you do it wrong, it causes more stress in the body, which drives you to breathe incorrectly again. And it becomes this long-term chronic dysfunction. There are so many factors to it. You can fix people's breathing with the way they sit, the way they walk, the way they stand, the way they speak, the way they eat, the way they chew, the clothes they wear, the car they drive. It's become modern life in general, in my opinion, it has become, it's just not how we should live. There's nothing we do about the way we live right now is how humans are supposed to live. And breath, I believe, is the biggest thing affected by that.
We're our own worst enemies. Like we've got this such like drive and desire to make things easy and more comfortable for ourselves that we're actually wrecking our own bodies. Would you say it's comfort then? It's this drive for comfort. We shouldn't be striving for this.
See, I personally don't think that as humans we strive for comfort. I mean, of course we want it. What I believe is that there are power structures that want to create certain things for us. The way we live in a society, I don't believe we'd live this way if we didn't have the hierarchy that we have. So the way we live now essentially is created by a hierarchy that wants us to be workers to move the human race forward for the way they see it being for us. Now, if you go to other countries where we live in communes of, say, 20, 30, 40 and smaller tribes, and the hierarchy is more family orientated, that doesn't happen anywhere else. When we choose things like democracy and hierarchical power structures, we have this thing we've got now where we create unbelievable comfort for ourselves. And, you know, to a degree, comfort causes weakness. And essentially weakness then over time causes dysfunction and sadly early death and the rest of it. So I agree, to a degree, we're our worst enemies. And I do not believe that we are smarter than animals. I really don't. I believe we've made awful decisions that are ruining the planet, ruining the way we live, ruining our bodies. And I think that there's a better way. And to me, it generally starts with the way we breathe.
It's on a side note, I found out the other day that, you always get free coffee in work. This is just we've come to accept that. Well, apparently that was introduced because of the caffeine, because they wanted their workers to be buzzing to increase their output. as well. So
yeah,
I can see that it is these, it's the structures put in place by the hierarchies above. They set us out to achieve one goal. They've gone, right, well, you're going to have a chair, you're going to have a computer, you're going to sit like that, and you're going to bust out work, and you're going to deliver a high impact. And it's just sort of, it's impacted our health.
Yeah, 100%. And it's, I mean, even if you think of, you think of, this is the way I see that the UK, for example, if you look at a factory, right, a factory makes things, right? And you've got the people at the top sit on the desks and they tell people in the factory how to make stuff. What I see countries like the UK as is that the higher level structures like MPs, etc., they're the bosses of the factory, and the UK itself is a factory that produces multiple products for an economy. And that's kind of where we are. We are workers inside a giant factory on an island, and we're told to do those things to advance ourselves in a different way. And it's just not optimal for the way we should live. And I think it's why we're more stressed now. I believe I had a conversation with someone the other day, in fact, in one of my breathwork classes. People often say that this is the easiest way to live there's ever been, that we're more comfortable, so things should be easier. Gen Z are the worst because they're so stressed and nothing happens. And you think, that isn't the case. That the data shows that people are far more stressed, which means there are far more stressors. It has to be the case. And I believe we've created those through things like phones, through things like too much comfort. I believe it's harder to live this way than it would be to live the way we did 100 years ago, because people back then were not as stressed. They were happier. They had more and they were healthier. And I think we've done ourselves damage by trying to be too comfortable.
Yeah, I think we're stressing about different things. And now the stress levels can be completely the same, if not more, from now. But it goes back to sort of, I believe, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, back in the day, all we cared about is shelter, food, and water. And that is what we stressed about. We don't have time to stress about self-actualization and our gender and little things like that. And it's almost like, we're quite privileged that those are the things that are stressing us out now, because we've got everything else below nailed.
100%. And this is where breathwork comes in. The reason we're so stressed about these things that are seemingly trivial to someone 50 to 100 years ago is not because they aren't important, because they clearly are. They're just important in context. So when we do breathwork, we increase what we call our window of tolerance. So our window of tolerance is how much our nervous system can take before starting to overstress and cause massive dysfunction and issues. We've become so comfortable, and the more comfortable you become in general, your window of tolerance starts to shrink. So for example, if you're a soldier, a fireman, a deep sea fisherman, you work on the rigs, you're a policeman, your window of tolerance widens because you've seen such awful things, you've done so much hard work, that everything else in between is pretty much fine. We've created such a comfortable country in life, and this is why I believe breathwork is becoming popular, that everyone's window of tolerance is about this thin, so they're getting stressed about emails and traffic and, you know, the gas bills and TV and Emmerdale and the food they eat. And so I think they're naturally going back to the idea of increasing window of tolerance just by virtue of knowing it works. And I believe that's why it's coming through collectively, because people know they need to increase that in order to live in this overly comfortable world we've created.
Do you know what? That's exactly why Rockman exists as well. Because I saw that people's resilience was diminishing. And that's why we're encouraging and we're inspiring and we're removing barriers to people taking on challenges in order to sort of further their mental state, their mindset, strengthen their resilience to deal. Because I don't think, when nothing is going wrong, people will not realize how weak they've become. It's only when challenge rears its head, its ugly head, and if you're not prepared, if you're not mentally ready to take that on, that is when you're going to, you know, experience a cascade of issues mentally.
100%. And you know, they say that if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. And I suppose the idea is that anyone that's been to the gym has had a kind of a personal running career of any kind. If you take a few weeks to months off the gym or off running, that stress that you would usually put on your body disappears. And so your body starts to shrink to the level it needs to be at. And so that's what we've done with our lives. You know, if you're not lifting weights, you don't need the strength, you don't need the extra muscle mass, so you lose it. And that's where we've got to, which again is why breathwork has come through so importantly, I believe, in that this is the way the world is and it isn't changing for now. So rather than change the world, we can change the way we see the world. And I think breathwork's the quickest way to get there.
So you weren't always a breathwork practitioner. You are a former Royal Marine Commando, is that right?
Yeah. Odd career for me. I played basketball to a high level around 19, when I was about 19, 20.
How tall are you?
6 foot. So that's too short for basketball. But I was good. I was offered two full scholarships to the States, one for Tennessee King's Academy and one for Boston University. I didn't take either. I played out there for a while, came back, and in the UK, I started to run some bars, and then I became a salesperson. And then after my dad died, he used to tell me stories of the Marines and the SAS, and he'd watch war films all the time. So the year he died, I decided to join the Marines because I thought he'll be forgotten about soon. Do you know, he died a week before my first niece was born. And I found it odd how he was there my whole life, but she would have no idea who he was. And I thought, it's almost like the world's forgotten him already. So I wanted to join something bigger than myself with the Marines, and so that I had some sort of legacy when people speak about the Marines and what the commandos have done, that they'd inadvertently mention me and my name and the level to which I've achieved something. So I did that for 10 years. I went out to Afghanistan. I was the point man out there using the Valen looking for IEDs. And left in 2019, came out, started a private investigation company with a friend, and then went into NLP, hypnotherapy, coaching, and found breathwork during that. And I found breathwork was the most powerful thing out of all of those modalities I'd done. And here I am.
What led you down that path then, the NLP and the breathwork? So did you have an interest in sort of self-optimization or something?
Yeah, always. From the basketball days, really, always wanted to better myself. When I was in sales, I read NLP books to communicate better with people, to understand some psychology of the way people speak and the way they act and body language. And NLP changed my life in the sense that I became one of the best salesmen in the country at the time. And when I left, I thought, what do I want to do? And I pursued then, having read a ton of NLP books, I pursued a career in NLP. And became a practitioner.
Just to jump in. If for listeners that aren't aware of what NLP is, what is NLP?
Good question. So it's neuro-linguistic programming. It came about in the 1970s from the human performance movement in California. And it was invented by two psychologists. And the idea was, in the beginning, how do we map excellence and then map it across to other people so they can perform the same? That was the original way of doing things. So there is a way, for example, David Goggins thinks, a way he moves, the way he does things. If we can map that out, we can write it down, we can turn it into a process, we can then give the process to another person so they can become just like David Goggins. It's that type of thing. And neuro-linguistic programming, neuro is brain, linguistic is language, and programming is programming, right? So the idea is that we can program the brain through speech.
And you found breathwork more powerful than that, because that's a powerful tool, right? The NLP.
NLP blew my mind when I did it. When I started my practitioner's course, I had the best teacher. He's unbelievable. A guy called Ewan Mockery, and he opened my mind to so many things. On course, he would specifically talk about ghosts and Sasquatches and UFOs and time travel, because you want to expand your mind to what is possible, so that as a neuro-linguistic programming coach, the more you thought was possible, the more you allowed it to be possible for others. So the more closed-minded I would be as a coach, I could never allow people to go where they wanted to go. So the idea there was to open our minds to that. With NLP, essentially, it was super powerful. I had a thing called timeline therapy done on me, and by Ewan, and it just removed anger and rage from me completely. It drained me. It literally fell out of my body and disappeared. And I was sold. And then I started hypnotherapy, and that's super powerful. It's known as the most powerful therapy there is, with an over 80% efficiency rate. When I started breathwork, it blows all those things out of the water. It's not even on the same level. It's a it's not even on the same level in any way. It's spiritual, it's scientific, but it's all you. I love the fact it has nothing to do with me at all. It's all the person breathing.
Yeah, that's nuts. It sounds like you were almost on the same path as someone like Derren Brown. You could have gone left and been a TV personality, or yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because he is actually he's one of the reasons I started NLP. I wanted to do. I loved magic as a child. Wanted to do that type of thing, and I've read all his books. He's literally one of my heroes. I'm obsessed with the guy and his work, and so. He does a lot of work for entertainment, which I love. I had an affinity somehow for, I won't say healing people. I don't like that term, but people found me somehow safe and healing and nurturing in some way just to be around me. And so things like breath work multiplied that because mm-hmm. whatever it was about me and my presence, people were drawn to it for their own healing and mm-hmm. breath work. Multiplied that by about 1,000 once we started the work. So it was, it still blows my mind now what the types of stories I hear from people.
Well, talking of stories, Chris, you explained your first time doing a certain type of breath work when I last heard you speak. Explain that to the listeners, because that sounded pretty, without using any sort of hallucinogenic drugs, you transcended time and space for a period of time.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was in the Marines at the time. No, I just left the Marines at the time. So I was still very much in a military mindset. And most of my friends were still Marines too. So I had gone to a yoga class and we started typical yoga, got to the end and started breath work to kind of finish the class off. Very basic pranayama, four in, four out through the nose. And I felt my body disappear. I felt like I could see space. I felt like I was in the universe somewhere with no body. And I felt just like pure consciousness. I had no body. I wasn't existing. There was no time. I could almost feel what felt like a female energy being lying across me. That's the only way I can describe it. And then the instructor asked us all to sit up and open our eyes. And when I opened my eyes, I jumped because I saw myself in a physical room with other human beings because I wasn't there 2 seconds ago. And that put me into a flat spin for a couple of weeks, tried to explain it to people. And, they looked at me like I was crazy because I kind of felt it at the time. And so I did another one. I went to figure out a bit more about breath work. And I never tell people this story because it's probably the craziest one. And I refrain from it, but as we're on a podcast, I'll do it right now. I did breath work in the house because I needed to know what happened that day. It's such an unbelievable feeling. I needed to know how I could go from the room to outer space almost. And during the practice, I had the same feeling. My arms disappeared, legs disappeared. The idea of myself disappeared, time disappeared. And then all of a sudden, like the blink of an eye, it sort of had this click. And in front of me, appeared what you'd call a therianthrope, which is half cat, half person. Six foot tall, body of a human, dressed a bit like, I guess, like space clothes, but Egyptian. And it was as real as you are right now. It's hard to describe it. It wasn't my thought. That was not something I created. It felt like I had met somebody or something. I knew it wasn't a thought that I had. It's a very different thing. And it made me jump and snap out of the whole thing. And of course, I tried to explain that to people and that's even crazier. So yeah. I'm sure there's lots of people listening now thinking that's mental. And no one believed me. They thought it was silly. So I had to go and learn everything I possibly could about breathwork. I read every book, probably spent 20,000-30,000 on courses, every course I could find, because I want to take people through that experience to see and feel the things that I felt, because it is so unbelievable what I felt that I couldn't not show people.
Did you manage to get it explained with your research and the courses and the books? Is there anything that actually said, yeah, this happens and this is why? Or
yeah, so yes, there's a book by Graham Hancock, and it's one of his most recent books, and he does a lot with alternate histories. And one of the things he talks about cave paintings, and they used to think that cave paintings were basically Neanderthals just drawing stuff they saw with some charcoal or a bit of paint. And through all the historical work he's done, through all the research he's done, what he believes it to be is on the walls, they would often draw people who are, maybe they'd have bull horns, but they were humans. Or they'd have the body of a horse and the body of a human. And they were kind of half animal, half human. And it turns out when he traveled places like Africa and Tunisia and Turkey, these different places around the world, the stories would go that shaman would be asked to cross over to the other side and gather information for the tribes in order to help whatever stage was coming next for the tribe. So they'd do things like they'd bloodlet, so they'd cut their body and lose enough blood to lose consciousness. They would not drink water or eat and dance for 24 hours straight to get into these hallucinogenic states. They would take mushrooms, they'd take peyote, they'd do breath work, and they'd do all these things to change their state. Now, what they'd found that the common theme across all of these experiences, across all these different countries, were that when people would cross over to the other side, whatever that means, that they would meet what you'd call therianthropes. They'd be half animal, half person. And they would have conversations with these beings. And they'd gather information from them. They'd be told things. They'd be given insights and wisdom. Very similar to taking mushrooms or to doing ayahuasca. They'd speak to these entities on the other side of wherever they went. When they came back, they'd have new information to give to the tribe. And I didn't know that until years after my experience, but that's what I believe it was. I believe it was an ethereal plane switch, and I saw something from somewhere else. And I'm honestly not even really a spiritual person, so for me to be saying these things makes me feel crazy when I say them. Mm. But it's as real as I can possibly explain.
I'm aware of Graham Hancock as well, and I've heard him say that there's scientific studies going on right now where they're actually trying to map out this world, aren't they? They're giving researchers hallucinogenics to sort of pass into this world and start to map it out and draw it out.
Yes. So they've been doing psilocybin trips for a long time, and they've started to map these out very differently. The thing they've done recently is they've found ways to extend psilocybin trips in a lower level and a safer way. So they're having people in psilocybin trips for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours. And people are going to the other side, and they are going to a place somewhere, whatever this means. And they are walking around, and they're pretty much in their minds drawing a map of this place, but they are still cognizant and aware of what's going on. And every time they go back, they're taking the map with them and creating this huge map. So they're spending days, weeks, months in these different places. And they're meeting people. They are speaking to entities. They're mapping these places out. They've had people go to the same place that someone else has been. And it's just the spirituality seems to be way ahead of the science on this. And it seems to be there may be something on the other side of whatever it is we are here that is as real as this is. If not more real.
It's not, if people are listening to this and thinking it's all a bit woo, I think until you've been there, until you've seen it with your eyes and experienced it, you won't appreciate it. I mean, a few years ago, I'm quite up about it. I had a bad period with sort of drink and sort of some recreational drugs, and there may or may not have been a bit of mushrooms in there and maybe some DMT. I've sort of felt what you're describing there. I may not have seen the beings, but when you, I tell you the one thing I'd felt is I felt I was a cloud, like my whole body disappeared. It was incredible. And I think until you sort of experience these states, you have to see it to believe it, sort of thing.
100%. And this is where I believe we've almost gone wrong. I believe my path was for a certain reason. Again, I'm not really a spiritual person. So when you say that people have to feel these things, I want people to, if they're listening to this and think this sounds crazy, they're listening to an ex-Royal Marine who was very, very military, very physical, was very pragmatic, talking about potentially beings and places on the other side of consciousness. And now that, you know, I'd have been sacked probably for talking about things like that and locked up. But once you've been there, it is impossible to deny. It's just, it's so hard to describe until you've done it that I believe people should. I mean, I'll tell a story from my first breathwork session in the Swansea area. I had a group breathwork session, and this was more of like a transformational style breath. It's very deep. It's the type of breath that shamans would do to cross to the other side. It's like a shamanic breath style practice. And people were circled up. And at the end, I'd often ask people if they want to share their experiences with everyone else to see if they either had something that came through strange or that they wanted to work out something. And a girl to my right-hand side, it was the 12-month anniversary of her baby's death. And during the breathwork practice, I mean, of course, you know, people were crying in the room listening to this, including me. In that practice, she said that she met and held her baby. She didn't say it felt like it. She did. And people never say it feels like. They never say it was almost like. She said, I held my baby for the full hour, and we spoke like through the mind somehow. And she let me know she was okay. She's in a safe place. She's fine. She loves me. And of course, people might think, okay, she just thought that because it, you know, makes her feel better. Maybe that's where she went. As she told this story, the girl across from her, who has never met her before in her life, burst into tears almost uncontrollably and said, for the whole session, I could see a baby girl in white light floating above you for the whole session. I had no idea why until now. And the amount of shared experiences that we have in those sessions that are completely unexplainable is off the charts. It's not something I could possibly explain, but it seems to be a collective consciousness and a meeting above where we are. I've had that more than 20 times, people experiencing the same thing that don't even know each other.
That's mad. That is mad.
It is. Now,
before we get into maybe some sort of integration and practice recommendations, mm. of sort of how we can mm. do this, what are your thoughts on Wim Hof? Keep it clean.
Okay. good question. So I absolutely love the man for what he's done. That the fact that he has brought breathwork to the masses, he's the reason I know about breathwork. So as an advocate for breath and health, he is the most important man for breath in the world, bar none, in my opinion. Now, as an actual practical practitioner and advocate of what he teaches and practices himself, I'm not a fan. And that goes to show in the fact he has some lawsuits out against his company for things going wrong. And it's because he's not the most stable of men. But then, you know, most, I guess, geniuses aren't. He does things his own way, which is why he's achieved incredible things. But sadly, he teaches some of those more dangerous things almost accidentally to many people. And it's caused the death of people, you know, down the line. Now, I'm not saying he's done that on purpose. I'm not saying that he's taught it specifically that way. But he does things in a way that is not recommended, such as breathwork in water. And people have done that trying to be Wim rather than go with the way you should practice it. And it's caused lots of issues. So in that sense, he seems to be my favorite breathwork practitioner, but also at the same time, one of my least favorites for the polarity of what he's doing for breathwork.
Fair enough. So yeah, don't listen to Wim. Listen to Chris right now. He's going to give you the actual breath techniques. But before we do you know the science behind this? Because obviously it's all about sort of oxygen in, carbon dioxide out. What by manipulating our breath, what are we doing with the sort of innards?
So again, most of these questions are simple and complicated at the same time. It depends what type of breath. It's just what we call gas exchange. So just pure, like, small examples, that the mouth isn't designed for breath. The nose is designed for breath. So if you were to cut the face in half here, you'd see there are channels that run down the nose here, where nitric oxide pools in these parts when you're not breathing through the nose. And the idea is that you can breathe nitric oxide in, it opens up the capillaries, and you've got better blood flow, better breath, and you've got better nutrient delivery around the body, those types of things. So when you breathe through the mouth, you stop having the nitric oxide moving, right? Which means that all of a sudden everything shuts down, you get inflammation, you start to get sick. Nitric oxide also has antibacterial properties, which means that you are more likely to be well and to fight off illness. So breathing through the mouth, which is the main dysfunction, causes issues with that. Breathing through the nose fixes a lot of those issues just by that itself. So on the most basic level, we are optimizing gas exchange by making sure you've got the right levels of CO2 to nitric oxide to oxygen in the body at the right times, at the right amounts, essentially.
And what are your top, say, let's say your top three breathing techniques that people can take away right now and go and use, and sort of what are they enabling you to do? What are they fixing or empowering?
Sure. So one thing you'd said earlier is, and of course it was just a throwaway comment by you, but it's, you know, sadly it's not far off wrong. Most people are breathing somewhere between 18 to 20 breaths a minute. And you'd said, oh, you know, we might breathe 30 to 60 times a minute. We should be breathing 6 times per minute, right?
Ideally. Six.
Six.
That, do you know what's, it's just reminded me, I've got a Garmin that tells me how much I breathe a minute. And I think on average, it's like 13 or 14.
Yeah. Yeah. Six. A lot of people, six. So it should ideally be something like 5 seconds. Well, perfect is 5.5 seconds in and 5.5 seconds out. The Heart Math Institute has done studies that the 5.5 seconds in, 5.5 seconds out is the optimal way to breathe. So number one practice I'd say for people is, if you want to breathe better, first thing you should do is just switch to the nose. That's the most important thing you can do. Breathe through the nose as much as you possibly can. The smaller holes will make you breathe from the diaphragm rather than from the intercostals and the chest muscles. So number one, switch to the nose. Secondly, balance your breath as much as possible. So breathe in for 5 seconds and out for 5 seconds as much as you can through the day. That will balance the system, because as you breathe in, your heart rate goes up, and as you breathe out, your heart rate goes down. So by breathing in for 5 and out for 5, you'll start to balance the system. I'd say those two things are the best place to start and the most important thing you can start with for overall health, longevity, better mindset, better fitness. Now, if you want to add a couple of things to that, you can extend your exhale. So if you wanted to fall asleep quicker, breathe in for 5 and out for 10. That will slow the heart rate down and put you into a parasympathetic state, so you can start to fall asleep quicker. You can do this after eating too, so that you digest your food better. And if you want to wake up a little bit in the morning, rather than have a coffee, you can breathe in for twice as long as you breathe out, and your heart rate will up a little bit, and it'll wake you up a little faster than it usually would. So they're the most three, I'd say three most important practices is upregulation, which is breathe in for longer than you breathe out, downregulation, which is breathing out for longer than you breathe in, and balance breath, which is breathing in for the same amount of time as you breathe out, and all through the nose, ideally.
They're cracking. Now, we at Rockman, we're all about sort of increasing resilience. I mean, we encourage all our members to go out and challenge themselves with physical challenges. What are some of the breath techniques that people could be using to increase their resilience or deal with the stresses and pressures that they're under in the moment?
Sure. So breath holds are great for that. Now, I've got a caveat with breath holds. Of course, don't do it in water. Of course, don't do this if you have things like COPD or major heart issues. Breath holds are a great, great way to allow the body to come under stress and to push through that stress. When we have the need to breathe, every living thing that breathes will have a panic response when you get too much CO2 in the body. So the idea is to hold your breath to allow CO2 to rise in the body and hold that for as long as you can in a safe manner, so that you can feel levels of stress in the body, know everything is going to be okay, and then hold that for as long as you deem safe and possible before starting to breathe again. So again, if you wanted to breathe, say, in for 4 or in for 5 and out for 5, and then hold your breath for 30 to 60 seconds at a time, that would increase resiliency in a really big way, especially holding on the exhale.
You also said at the start about increasing performance, because a lot of these challenges we set are running, and you were saying breathe through the nose. Now, I don't know about you, but like, if when I'm going at it, I'm just get lazy. I'm like, I need the oxygen. I'm dying here.
Yeah.
How do you overcome that need? Like, what some things you could do there?
Sure. So one of the things you can do is, when you're running, of course, or doing any kind of physical activity, the likelihood is as far as you can push will be up to what we'll call threshold, which is often just as far as your body can handle energy-wise, energy system-wise. Now, if you're to go for a run, for example, you want to run to the threshold of which you can hold a nasal breath. So at the moment you start to need to breathe through the mouth, you need to maybe slow it down very slightly so that you are at the threshold of nasal breathing. That allows you to increase the oxygen in the body. It calms the body down a lot more and just improves the general fitness. Now, what that will do is it will slow your runs down initially because it's a lot harder. But what you'll notice, even over that run, as the oxygen intake starts to become better, you'll improve the run by the end of that run. You'll find you'll have more energy breathing through the nose than you did through the mouth at the beginning.
That sounds like an almost perfect zone two breathing technique. You know, when you're going out for those long runs.
Yeah. 100%. Ideally, though, what you want to be able to do is push that nasal breathing up into zone two, zone three, zone four. So that's hard. Once you start to panic, you're going to want to breathe through the mouth, and we'll call those gears of different types of breath. If you can hold that nasal breath up into your kind of upper 90% of your threshold, that's an amazing place to be. Not many people will ever get over that. But if you can roughly be sprinting and still breathe through the nose, that's exactly where you'd need to be really for optimal health and fitness breath-wise.
I just thought, you know, when you see those slow-mo replays of the 100-meter sprinters running towards you and they've got like rubber face, but their mouth is always shut. Their mouth is, they're not like that. Their mouth is shut. It's all through the nose. It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And real quick with that, there's a practice you can do. So your spleen holds what we call hematocrit, which is, it has a lot more red blood cells in the blood in the spleen than any other part of the body. And the idea is to be able to release that in the body when the extra oxygen is needed. So if, for example, you're drowning, you've had to hold your breath for too long, it releases blood from the spleen to have more oxygen in the body to allow you to survive for longer. Now, there's specific breath hold practices you can work with to release that from the spleen early. So it's like a legal blood doping so that you can improve your performance in a run. So if you were to do that, say, 3 hours or so before a big competition, you'd have up to an extra 80% hematocrit, which is red blood cells in the blood from that area. And essentially, you're a lot fitter during that time than before you've done it, because you've got extra oxygen being carried around the body.
I love it. I love a body hack. Like, I love knowing how things work and then doing that hack to get the maximum benefit. If people want to learn more about breath work and such, where would you direct them? Are there any podcasts or books or something?
Yeah, I'd say the best place really is the book Breathe by James Nestor. My Breathe or Breath. That's the first book I read. It's incredible. It's got everything you need in there to understand the basics of breath. I'd say pretty much every breathwork book after that is the same as his book, just written slightly differently. Of course, if you want to learn a lot more about breath, then go and do a breathwork course, something like, I'd say probably choose Stig Severinsen's Breathology. That's he used to be the champion for breath hold underwater. He had a 22-minute breath hold underwater. So he's a great guy to learn from, I know. So he's got some real good practices in there and really understands the science of breath. So that's a great place to learn from. There's tons. But if you wanted to learn the spiritual shamanic side of stuff I spoke about earlier, someone like Tim Morrison, Spiritus Breathwork, actually a friend of mine. I'd say he's the best breathwork facilitator of that style in the world. And he actually charges in Australian dollars too. So for us over here, it's super cheap.
And if people wanted to follow you, Chris, or go to one of your workshops, how can they do that?
Sure. So pretty much everything I do is on my Instagram, and it's the_Chris_Davis. On there is all the crazy photos and videos you'll see of people crying, kicking and screaming and going through their things and these breathwork practices. If people want to join a course, click on the link in my bio. It's got all the courses, all the events, all the places I'm doing it and all the prices. So if people happen to be local or fancy a long drive or even plane flight, you've got someone coming over from Ireland next week to do one of these sessions, then click on the link, sign yourself up and join in.
Cracking. Chris, thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time. And we'll catch you soon.
Yeah, definitely. Really enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you.